The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
We always say keep your mind, your mission, your mind, because it's called Mission Minded with, of course, my good friend Michael Coleman. He formerly is up for the Jimmy Hill Mission, did a fantastic job there, and he moved on to, of course, be the CEO of the Montgomery Food Bank. They cover 35 counties in the great state of Alabama. Michael, how you been, brother? What's been going on?
Nothing. Had a great weekend, and always look forward to our Mondays together and talking about issues that are important.
Yes, and you can listen to the show, of course, every single Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Perfect time to be listening to the show. First run shows on the TKR app. Thanks to over 100,000 people who have already downloaded the app. We greatly appreciate that. And if you miss any of the shows, that's okay. Go to Tony Curry Radio Podcast or TKR Podcast. It's Curry with a K. And listen to the show whenever you want. It's free on every major industry. It's wonderful out there. Getting ready for the holidays. Before we get into our subject today, I want you to talk a little bit about the Montgomery Food Bank, and certainly us being now inside 2 months before the holidays, I would imagine this is a super busy time. Seems like the holidays always are a super time for non-for-profits, but particularly when we're talking about food for people who need it. Talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, and it's, you know, one of the shocking statistics that you hear is last year there was 60 million people that stood in line for food assistance.
Wow.
So that's one in five in this country, and there's a lot of people that have stood in a food line that you would be shocked at, but they just simply, with the high inflation for gas and for just buying things, and they just can't make ends meet. And so one of the challenges is food insecurity. And things that they've taken for granted their whole life is just no longer there. And so it's putting a strain on our systems. But especially this time of year, we know a lot of American meals, if you think about, I mean, a lot of American holidays are spent with family coming together. And, of course, Thanksgiving, none more so than that. Christmas is always about a lot of eating, and so a lot of that is just not a reality for a lot of families. I mean, they don't know where, forget a special meal, they don't know where their next meals are coming from. And so we want to be mindful of our neighbors and our community. So many people that are senior in life now who may not have children in the area, just struggle, can't stand at a stove and cook anymore. And but can't necessarily get in a car. You know, they may live 25 miles from a grocery store. And so you're talking about adding gas and all the other inflationary cost of food. You know, they find themselves eating out of a can or something because that's maybe all they can do. And so that's what really drives me, is to make sure that that our neighbors have enough food. The reality is Feeding America believes this. I believe this. Montgomery Area Food Bank practices this. There's enough food out there for everybody, and there's no reason that our neighbors should go without food. And there's an abundance in this country. Just one of the challenges we have is to get the excess food that there is and funnel that into channels. And that's, we spend a lot of our time just food sourcing. And part of that on the flip side is sometimes we'll get extra items that we have too much of. And then we have the networks that we share it with our other food banks. So we're not in competition with each other. We're there to support each other. So Feeding America Network is just a great network. And so I just want to encourage everybody to support their local food bank, because there's people every day, 365 days a year, who just live to make sure that Americans and people in their community have enough to eat every day.
It is certainly understandable. He is Michael Coleman, CEO of the Montgomery Food Bank. Before we get into our topic here, it is certainly understandable that people that do not have access to food like they should aren't as healthy because they're eating what they have to eat. Is it true that bad food is cheap and good food is expensive, number one? And number two, when you do give up your care packages, do you look at the nutritional value and what you're giving people? I know you've talked about, you know, we want people to make sure they have cookies on occasion. We get that. But do you look at it from a nutritional standpoint, and do you look at it from a calorical standpoint to make sure that the people that are accessing your food through Feeding America and the Montgomery Food Bank are getting healthy meals?
Well, it's so many dynamics of things you just mentioned. So I want to go back first and hit on the whole thing about bad food being cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a plane going to Israel back in 2007, and somebody who was from Israel had been visiting in the States for about a month and was flying back. It was a young girl, young adult, and she talked about how our values in terms of food were backwards. And I'm like, oh, really? You know, I'd never heard that before. So what do you mean? And she said, well, it may cost you a dollar to go get a big juicy orange at the grocery store, but I can get a double cheeseburger for 99 cents at McDonald's. And she said, you know, what are people going to do? They're going to spend, you know, the 99 cents because our fresh fruits and fresh vegetables and all that it can be expensive. But then you get a lot of cheap cookies and stuff like that. So somebody's got a dollar, they're looking at quantity. Because one of the misunderstandings is I've worked a lot with the poverty population. Very few I've ever met know how to read a food label, and it's not because they're not capable, but nobody's ever taught them, and they don't understand the values found in here. And so they're not, people in poverty typically are not making the decisions. That's more people in the middle class look at the nutritional value, understand the servings per size and measure calories. And that's why you have so much obesity in poverty, is because bad food is available. And people don't know how to read food labels. It's just not something that's valued in the poverty community. When you're trying to do the best and you're just trying to make it meal to meal sometimes, you know, you're going to choose a bag of Oreos over, you know, a bag of oranges. And it's just a reality. Now, I had a real interesting perspective that was shared with me by a CEO. I think it was in San Antonio, maybe it was Houston, that felt very strong because Feeding America says we need to put out nutritious food. And I agree with that. We want to make fresh fruits and vegetables and all that, and we really strive to do that. But it's a little bit of the lesson that during the Obama administration, when Michelle put forward these healthy standards on food lunches, and what we know is a lot of kids just skipped the meal. Mm-hmm. They were not going to eat the healthy food. Now, that was not all of them. I certainly get it. So this CEO's perspective is, I'm not going to fill my food bank, whether it's good food or bad food, I'm not going to fill my food bank with food that my clients are not going to eat. And it may be better food, it may be better for them, but what sense does it make to have a bunch of food that they're not going to eat that's going to go to waste, and they're still going to be hungry, and we've wasted food? So there's some truth in that as well. But going back to how we prepare food, you know, we do try to get things that are culturally equal, are culturally familiar, maybe I should say. But we try to, when we do our senior supplement packets, we try to find things that are lower in salt and try to be mindful of things like that. We don't want to radically change somebody's diet. We know that, particularly here in the South, we don't as a whole. I mean, I have a horrible diet. I eat like a raccoon in a dumpster. I mean, I'm the last one in the world to be criticizing somebody about their intake of sugar and salt and fried foods. I'm guilty of all the above. So, you know, we want to strike that right balance where there's people who want to eat healthy, and we want to give them good, fresh fruit and vegetables and make sure they have that opportunity. But again, I'm not going to shove stuff down their throat that the average person wouldn't eat because it's, you know, it's the latest and greatest on the health food scale that you hear about. So it's a balance. It's a constant challenge. But no, we very much, it's not so much the calories that we are concerned about, but we try to say when we're distributing food, we want to distribute proteins, and they can come in many different forms. You can have, you know, peanut butter is, it's easy because peanut butter doesn't need to be refrigerated or frozen. Most proteins and things like that do require refrigeration or freezing capacity. And we have some clients that don't have that. And then we try to do fresh produce, you know, fruits and vegetables, and not just in a can, because when they're processed, they're going to be processed with, you know, more fat and more salt and all those things. We try to give them fresh as much as we can. And then dairy and, you know, your cheeses and milks and all the things that go with that. So we try to make it as absolutely balanced as we can, but still something that, that they're going to want to eat.
He's Michael Coleman, of course. He's the CEO of the Montgomery Food Bank that distributes to Feeding America, formerly the Jimmy Hill Mission. All right, so I have to ask you a question. You can hear the show, by the way, every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Central Time. We'll try to get some emails and also info at tonycurryradio.net if you want to send those out. So with the holidays coming up, there's a lot of food drives and can drives, right? And, yeah. And I think I speak for a lot of people that I want to get as much food as I can for the least amount of money. So when I'm dropping off these bags and bags of food for you, first of all, it makes me feel good because I'm coming up with two armfuls full of all kinds of things. But a lot of people go out and buy the cheapest things they can buy in the can.
Right.
If you can buy 100 cans at 99 cents a can, but it's stuff you know people aren't going to necessarily eat, what are you really doing for a food drive? Would you rather have people just give you the money and say, here, listen, take this and go buy what you need, or do you actually get, because I'm trying to think of something really cheap, like I don't know, canned carrots or beans are always super, super cheap. You can get a can of beans. It used to be 35 or 40 cents. It's probably a buck now, but would you rather people show up with 100 cans of baked beans, or would you rather them just give you the money and say, please get what you need?
Yeah. So we do, we push food drives a lot, and I've kind of gone back and forth. If I were honest, I would say it's easier if you give us the money and let us purchase what we need to purchase it through our channels, which oftentimes are cheaper.
Yeah.
And then it lets us purchase what we need and what we don't. But a food drive, when you think about it, because any business, any lawyer's office, any organization, any school can host a food drive, and it gives everybody a chance, instead of just writing a check, it gives everybody a chance to, you know, be mindful. When you're bringing in those can of beans and you're putting it in the big pile right there, and you're looking and you're saying, you know, there's something about that that helps you both appreciate the fact that you do not have to be and stand in this line, but there's something about you're contributing for the well-being of others. So I don't want to minimize that process. And what we try to do is we try to give, if we're having a food drive, we really just started trying to be very honest with our people and say, you know, it used to be, yeah, we're doing a food drive, whatever you get is fine. But we're actually giving them menus and saying, listen, we're truly thankful for whatever you bring in, but here's what we really need. And so we're trying to, like with our senior supplements, where we know these are going, we try to get the proteins that are easy to open, you know, tuna fish in these tear bags or chicken or pop, you know, cans that are easily pop top, whatever, things that are easy to microwave for our elderly people so they're not having to cook. I think the fear is if you get specific, you know, you run the risk of, well, you should just be happy with whatever you get. And the truth of the matter is we are happy and we will make do. And we appreciate everybody's care. But if they ask, can we do a food drive? We say, yeah, you know, but here's specifically what we need. If you really are interested in helping us, here's specifically what we need. Now, whatever you bring, we're going to thank you. And it's going to be real appreciation. But if you really want to make even a bigger impact, here's some specific items we need and here's why. And I found that people typically respond to that. If you just be honest with them about what your needs are.
And this is a question I did not ask you, so you may not have the answer. What are your top three things you would need? Like if you said, listen, these are the three things we need the most at the Montgomery Food Bank, what would they be?
Usually, and I'll tell you why I say usually. Usually, it's protein.
Yep.
You just get more bang for the buck. A jar of peanut butter in a family brings about it's just really good. You know, you can eat proteins as opposed to a lot of carbohydrates. So you can eat cookies, and that kind of just, that's not good for your system. But proteins are good if you're, you know, diabetic and you're trying to eat something you tend to stays with you longer, and your body just needs that. And that's some of the hardest things to get sometimes. And then fresh produce. The reason fresh produce is so challenging is because, so we have an ordering system. So if you send us frozen, if we pick up at Walmart, a pallet of frozen hamburgers, let's say, or pork chops, we can move those into our freezer and that's fine. And they can stay there for several months if need be. But when we get produce, sometimes we'll have, you know, up to a week to move that, but sometimes it's got maybe 2 days left. And so we can't put that in our inventory system because by the time somebody ordered and came to pick it up, it'd be unusable. So we're having to create special, like, short notice, like, hey, you know, agencies come up here almost a moment's notice and get this to try to distribute that, because if they can't, then we have to dispose of it at a dump or something like that. And so we're even trying to, again, create these channels where even that waste is not actually wasted at a landfill. We can take it and give it to farmers who are feeding hogs and cows and all that, to just, we'd like the cycle to keep going and not just get to where we're dumping food in the landfill. Like I said, last year, the Feeding America Network took, say, 4.7 billion pounds of food from going to a landfill.
That's
this
amazing.
Is good food. This is not wasteful food.
It's amazing.
You put it back into our system. And the truth of the matter is, there's more out there to be had. And so I don't think people, when they hear about food banking, it's almost like, well, people bring in food or companies donate food. But a lot of it is out there and taking advantage, talking with farmers, talking with manufacturers, talking with grocery stores. It's any excess that they have, we take a hold of that. But just to give you an example of how things can change in a moment's notice. So every food bank in Alabama is starving for protein right now, except for us, because one of the Walmart distribution centers was damaged in the hurricane. And so a lot of the stuff that was going down to that distribution center is come up to a Walmart distribution center that gives us excess food. And so they've been giving us tons of protein. And so we love it. We have an abundance of protein, but we almost have more than we can store right now.
Yeah.
But part of the food sourcing responsibilities and network responsibilities is I call down there to Mobile, I call Birmingham, I call Columbus, and just say, hey, are you needing frozen meat or protein, frozen protein? And, you know, absolutely. And so they'll send a truck down and pick up a truckload. We'll send a truckload down. And that's part of the network where if they have excesses, they share with us. We have excesses, we share with them. And so it's a sophisticated network, but it's a mindset that we're all in this together. Like, I have a primary responsibility to feed the 35 counties that we're over. But if I can't move this product because there's just not the demand for it, but there's demand somewhere else, it's my obligation to make sure that food gets used, even if it's in another location.
Michael, in the summer of 1988, I went 45 straight days on peanut butter bread and a gallon of milk. It can be done. I did it because I had to, but I was like, I had a big jar of Jif, I had a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk, and I got through 45 days. I'm just saying, it's not healthy.
I've had some peanut butter and milk days as well, so I know.
And that was actually up from having Miracle Whip sandwiches. I used to have Miracle Whip sandwiches. I had the BLTs without the B and the A and the T. So there you have it. We all have tough times. Mission Minded here, 10 o'clock every Monday through Friday morning, to 10 o'clock Central Time, wherever you get your podcast, at Tony Curry Radio Podcast. All right, let's get into our topic here. And just like us, man, the show flies by. We got about 10 minutes to get into it. But great article in bizjournals.com, why building on and sustaining a legacy is imperative to your business. I will tell you, I went to a fast food restaurant over the weekend. Their moniker is We Have the Meats. I don't need to tell you who that is. And I went to the drive-thru and they were out of roast beef. And I even tweeted about it because I'm not one of these guys, you know, I understand we have issues. Things happen. I've worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken where we were actually out of chicken. It's happened because the chicken truck didn't come. I know it happens, right? But I was like, okay. And I drove like, I don't know, 6 or 7 miles to get to this restaurant because there's not one where, and I was really looking forward to the sandwich and it really bummed me out. And I will give them a second shot because I'm a forgiving, compassionate kind of guy and I enjoy their food. That's not a good look. Again, though, when you have a restaurant that is really, really super successful, it's been around for a long period of time, and then they franchise out, you never know what you're going to get per franchise because it's not the original family running the joint, and I get that. I'm going to use Kentucky Fried Chicken as an example, though, because when I first started working there, we worked at a great restaurant in Sharonville, Ohio. It was run from top to bottom, and it was known as one of the best KFCs in the tri-state area because we took so much pride in it. And I remember spending 2 to 3 weeks in front of we didn't have computers at the time, in front of a book reading about the history of KFC, how it was born, about Colonel Sanders, where he was from, how he built his business. And it was an eye roller for me because I'm 15 years old, but it was important. And I remembered. I remember the 11 herbs and spices, the whole nine yards. And I think that's important because, I mean, if you're going to play, you know, shortstop for the Yankees, you know about the legacy of the Yankees, right? You just don't come in and start playing. How important is it to know the back history, if you will, of a particular organization before you work for them? And can you instill that work ethic, if you will, or the history of a business into your employees? You've been around for a long period of time. Jimmy Helmich's been around for a long period of time. How did you do that with your workers?
Well, I tell you, when I come in, I do think, and I'm looking at an organization, I do think it's very important to understand where you've been, to understand, you know, when new employees come in, I sit down with them to talk to them about the Feeding America network and where we fit into that network and then where they fit into our particular organization. But when you're talking about branding yourself, lots of times, like you said, you can't control, like, for instance, I can't control, I'm just going to use Birmingham's Food Bank, and I know the interim director, she's doing a great job. They're doing a great job. But let's just say they weren't. You know, I can't control whether they do a good job or a bad job. So you may be where there's a food bank that's maybe you don't feel like it's doing a great job. So I can't control the brand, so to speak, like nationwide. Feeding America, because I think they're an absolute fabulous organization, and I'm speaking that from the heart, and I think there's some really great food banks, and the vast majority of the people I've come in contact with take it very seriously. But I guess there could be some that aren't as good as others. But when I came in here to the Montgomery area, you know, I said, I want our brand to be quality in whatever we do, but that you have to understand that means nothing can be overlooked. And that's a challenge if you don't have a culture that everybody's into that and everybody's looking at that. So, like, for instance, I started interacting with the agencies and we do a monthly Zoom, and any agency can come on there. And I said, listen, I want to hear what all the problems are. And I don't care if it's going to take me 4 hours on here. I'm going to stay on here to the last question is asked and whatever that costs me, because that's part of us branding, because it's more than just answering the question. What the message that I'm sending is to the agencies is, number one, I value them. And if they're having problems distributing our product that they have agreed to distribute out to the clients, if there's a problem, I care enough that I want to know what that is. And number two, I'm willing to put resources to include my time, money, whatever it is, towards solving those problems. And so my hope is that they leave there going, hey, the agency that's above us that we're contracted with genuinely cares about the difficulties we're having on the ground. And I'm telling you, it changes the whole dynamic, because if you feel like that you're not, then or you're not getting that kind of support, it can just bring the whole morale down. Now, let me just give you one quick example.
Yeah.
And I think I may have mentioned this. I was just overwhelmed at how the network Feeding America is put together, and there's no problem in food or no challenge in food banking that you can't go into the Hunger Net and find resources to help you address that, or you've got 200 other food banks to reach out to. And just the whole culture is about partnering together to make each food bank successful. I've just never seen anything like it. Well, just 4 or 5 years ago, that didn't exist. The Feeding America looked at themselves as more of a regulatory agency, and were looking at us like, hey, this is what you're contracted to do. This is what we're going to be checking on. But a CEO by the name of Claire Babineau Fontenot, you might be able to guess, is from Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
She came in and totally changed that whole dynamic. And that was her vision. And so I'm like, wow, look, it makes all the difference in the world that I can turn to them and get any support. So I want the agencies to feel the same way. But that means I have to enforce that, because there's nothing in the contract that says I have to do that. So I have to constantly show that I'm willing to give of my time and put any effort in, and that the cares and concerns of our agencies and our clients have to matter to us. So I have to show it. I have to talk about it. I have to enforce it on our own employees to make sure they're getting on board with the culture. And all of that so that we establish this lasting culture that says, hey, Montgomery Food Bank is doing everything they can. And if there's something that you see that you would like for them to do better, they will sit down and spend the time listening to you and trying to come to some sort of agreement. Very important. I want to brand us that way.
Yeah, and I think, and my son works for Publix up the street, and they had...
Great change.
Yeah, it really is. And they had this program called SOAR that they invited every one of their workers, if they were a junior, senior, or older, to come into the program to talk about, this could be your life. And of course, most people would say, I don't want to manage a Publix. Well, my gosh, when you find out you can make $130,000 a year within 6 years of being inside that program, because they do all the hiring within the program and within the store, yeah, all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute. Because I mean, we are in Alabama, particularly in this state, because a lot of people don't decide to go to college and we're into quote unquote skill workers. The thing that's really interesting to me is, as I remember my manager at my KFC, and this is back in 1982, he had worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken for 6 or 7 years, and he was proud to be the manager of his restaurant. And most people would say, what do you do for a living? Well, I'm a manager at a fast food restaurant. It doesn't matter. If that's what you want to do and you're in the service industry and you're proud at what you do, that's an important thing. And I think it's important, because when you're talking about, whether it's an Arby's or a fast food train or any type of transient type of business, and that is a business where you're hiring seasonal workers or people that are 16, 17, 18, and obviously they don't want to spend the rest of their lives being there, it's important to let them know that they have a future there if they want it. And that you'll hire within, because you never know what the world's going to bring you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the truth of the matter is, we've talked about the political tensions of our world. We're coming up on an election. We demonize each other. Both parties are guilty of it. If you put big in front of anything, it makes it evil. Like big insurance, big business, big banking, big whatever, big oil, whatever it is.
Big government.
The truth of the matter is that we have so many of the Walmarts and the Publix and all of those who are, you would not believe the amount of food and the amount of dollars that they put back in to make food banks thrive. And they just don't get the credit that they deserve. But without these stores being a part of this, even the Dollar Generals that we have and Targets and Aldi's and all of these are great supporters of the food banking network. And that's why I want to tout them, because without them, that's half of our inventory coming in or stuff that they just donate to us. And they are just vital to making us successful, and they just don't get the love and the credit that they deserve.
Well, if you want to find a good business, if you're in a neighborhood and you already have, say, a chicken store or a restaurant or a grocery store, and then you have another chain that comes in that does exactly what you do, and they set up across the street and they kick your ass within 6 months, they know what they're doing, because that's what Publix does. I mean, it's, yeah. There's three grocery chains around, and I'm like, why do we need another grocery store? It's because they get it. They know it, and they hire within, and there is that culture, if you will, inside the store. It's not to say you're not going to get a bad manager here and there, and it happens, but I mean, it really is amazing. Hey, Mike,
if you walk into a Publix, it's been my experience, it almost feels like it's upscale.
Yeah.
Like, it's, everything is super clean. It's super bright. Mm-hmm. It's all, everything's super fresh. Now, some people say, well, you might pay more for that or whatever. You know, and to be honest with you, I haven't priced different stores at different times. And everybody's like, Aldi doesn't have all the frills, but their stuff is cheaper. They're going to a different market. But the bottom line is, that's the branding you're talking about, and the quality. That when you walk into a Publix, it screams quality.
Yep.
There are people that there's intentionality here, that they're not just existing, they are thriving, and they would rather not open up a store if they had dirty floors or bad fruit or whatever. And it's like, if I need something of quality, I can go to a Publix and I can find it, and it's going to be the right thing. And that's what they're trying to put forth. But it goes even more beyond. If you go behind the scenes, the people, the managers, just the culture as an organization is just as incredible.
Well, and I'll say this, and Woodhouse Day Spa is one of our fine sponsors here on Tony Curry Radio. Every time I go in that place, it's the same 8 people working there. If you have the same employees in there every time you go in, whether it's a Publix, whether it's an Arby's, whether it's the Montgomery Food Bank, whatever, and the employees don't leave, there's something special going on.
Yep.
And it's not because they're paying $32 an hour. I got news for you. It's just, and then when you see those same people, you realize there must be something special going on here, because these people don't want to leave their jobs, and they could be menial jobs. It's pretty amazing stuff. Hey, Michael, great stuff, man. We're up against it. Thank you so much for your time. We'll get into some more stuff going on next week. We had a bunch of emails. We'll get into those next week here. Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. You can hear the show every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Central Time here, of course, on TKR, the TKR app. Thanks to 100,000 people who already download the app. And of course, wherever you get your podcast, TonyCurryRadioPodcast.com. Bless you, brother. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Loved it as always, brother.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.